Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to Streets Ahead, your podcast dedicated to all things cycling, walking and wheeling in the UK and beyond. I'm Ned Bolting.
I'm Adam Tranter.
And I'm Laura Laker.
And this, still just about, is 2021. This is our year-end roundup. We're talking about the year gone by, the highs, the lows, as well as our hopes and dreams for a better world in 2022. But before we come to any of that, because we haven't podded for quite a while, and last time we all saw each other was in the flesh in Nottingham, we've had massive news affecting one of our triumvirate of activists here on our team, and that is Mr. Adam Tranter, the small matter of becoming cycling and walking overlord, or commissioner, to put it another way, for the entirety of the West Midlands. Adam, many congratulations, and what's it like being the West Midlands walking and cycling czar?
Oh, well, thanks very much. It's great so far. There's a lot to learn, a lot to do. But yeah, it's really enthusing, actually. I started at possibly the best and worst possible time, just before Christmas, just getting into my stride and then having a little bit of a break. But that's given me a chance to stop and consider and think about the strategy for next year and beyond.
How does your job differ from, I don't know, the positions, the kind of high-profile positions that Boardman Chris holds in Manchester, Sarah Story in Sheffield, you know, that Andrew Gilligan used to do in London? Are they all the same kind of gig, or is each job come with its own packages of responsibilities and areas of kind of authority, I suppose?
Largely similar. I spent a lot of time talking to Chris and Will as well about actually how it would be best to have this set up, and that wasn't something I was involved in, but the mayoral team wanted to get this to be as most effective as possible. So learning from all the things that Chris and Will and others have learned over the years has been really important. And you remember on this podcast, Chris said, you've got to be speaking for the boss and you've got to have access to the cash. And they were the two important things for me going through this process. And pleased to say that I've got, you know, the buy-in, and obviously there's some of it you have to continue to earn through trust and through doing good work. But I think we're in a really good spot. So yeah, it's largely similar to those roles.
So Will Norman of London, the London Cycling and Walking Commissioner, who's been in the role longest, I think, of all of our cycling walking commissioners in the UK. Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. 5 years, 4 years, something like that.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? So they've been good advice. So you don't have the kind of cash of London's cycling and walking commissioner, though. I guess that's one of your challenges that you're going to have to face.
We have a proportionate amount of cash for the region. In my campaigner mode, I'd always say, oh, it's not enough. But in commissioner mode, I think there's a lot of stuff we can be doing, and a lot of ways that we can spend this cash more effectively, I think. So, you know, it's not insignificant. Andy Street, the mayor of the West Midlands, has committed throughout his term to spend sort of £10 a head in the West Midlands on active travel. And we also have what's called the City Region Sustainable Transport Settlement, CRSTS, as I'm starting to learn.
Catchy.
And that is over £1 billion awarded to the West Midlands for primarily bus and active travel schemes. So, you know, you could come out of this with £100 million or so, let's say, awarded to stuff that's really going to benefit active travel over the next 5 years. So it's not insignificant. And I think we've got to start sensibly as well, because I think one of the worries of everybody, including the Treasury, is if you give loads more money, could local authorities spend it as effectively, or do, you know, is this a process? And I think it's probably a bit of a process, because we've spent the last sort of 50 years not really doing anything for active travel. So you have to kind of learn and build on top of that success.
It's kind of exciting for the West Midlands, I think. I remember when we did our West Midlands episode, we gave the region, well, Andy Street, a bit of a hard time for his focus on the old canal towpath and not much kind of happening on the ground. But it seems like maybe things are shifting there, which is great, because I think one of the kind of defining features of 2021 in terms of cycling and walking is what a postcode lottery it's been for many people. Some people have got huge strides in their areas for walking and cycling, and some have got nothing or going backwards. Yeah, so whenever somewhere gets a big push forward like this, a statement of intent, then it's really exciting, I think.
Can you give us, I mean, obviously you haven't been in the job very long, and a lot of these things are, I guess, are kind of in the very, very early stages of planning and assessment. But can you give us an example of any kind of, you know, concrete infrastructure projects that might be visible by this time next year that actually will make a sort of difference on the ground, the kind of things that you might be looking at?
Yeah, so there's the, not just because of my work in Coventry, this is one of the major schemes generally, but we have the Binley Cycleway, which is going to be a really high quality cycleway from the city centre in Coventry going right out to Binley Business Park in the east, and also then north to the University Hospital. It's about 7 kilometres, I think, all in. Really high quality stuff, all being funded, has been funded pretty much, and that's being led by the West Midlands Combined Authority, who I now represent. And work's pretty much starting soon. And I think the learning from that is that we need to do more of those more quickly. I think Coventry had a bit of a plan. They had a really good designer who had started to already scout out where the next cycleways could be and started to kind of sketch them out. So when money was available, as it will be in the future, the region was able to go, right, well, there you go. You know, you've got some plans, you've got a good scheme, it's going to where people want to be, go and do it, kind of thing. And I guess one of my big things for next year is to try and get as many of the seven local authorities in the region to that point where they've got a bit of a pipeline going, and we're focusing, I guess, on what's going to make the most impact, because there is funding, and it's about getting stuff in the ground. And I think the mayor has been probably a bit frustrated in the past about the kind of speed of delivery with stuff, and that's sort of one of the things I'm charged with speeding up. So we should see the Cowden cycleway in Coventry, which is funded differently by the air quality stuff that Coventry has, is really, really good, and we're starting to see stuff that people are looking at and going, oh, they're doing good stuff. And I hope that we can get that in every one of the seven local authority areas.
My big concern, Adam, is that you're going to become like quite a dry political presence on this podcast, and you know, all the spark will go out of you, all that kind of cheeky verve and you know, that kind of campaigning instinct. Have you changed? Has it changed you already, the chains of office? Have you been dragged down?
No, I'd like to, you know, I'd like to ensure, and Ned and Laura, I ask you to keep me in check here. I want to make sure that I'm not being overly boring. And also, doing this job is a big job, and I work for the taxpayer. So there's an element of sensibility required there. Part of it is kind of diplomacy, I guess, in an extent. But one of the reasons I think they hired me, or what they said they hired me, is because I've approached this differently, and I have, you know, a way of communicating things, I guess, that's slightly different to other folk. And I want to kind of continue to do that. I might have to tone down some of the kind of brashness sometimes. but I think you've got to be yourself, right? Otherwise, you just lose it, and it's all pointless.
Well, yeah, I think we could agree. We could do with a little bit of boring in politics at the moment. So that's fine. That's fine by me. You can be boring. You can be boring if you want, Adam. As long as you get a job done. No, but listen. Many congratulations. I think it's pretty amazing. I was quite surprised. Did you know that when we were all together in Nottingham? Presumably you did. You knew what was happening.
Yeah, of course you knew. But I'm
and
very,
you just
very
didn't
good
say we were with you all day, and you didn't even let it slip once. Or it's a
the soul of discretion.
Well, just testament to how much discretion I have in this job. So yeah, no, I didn't tell you, Ned. I was too busy trying to work out how to pay for the tram.
It was very complicated.
It was super complicated. All right, well, brilliant. Well, let's have a little think about the duration of this podcast. We can think about what we might, us three at least, one idea that we can pin a bit of hope to for 2022, for the coming year. So have a little think about that, and we'll come back to that as a subject maybe towards the end. But in the meantime, I suggest we have a little dabble around the year just coming to a close now, 2021, which has been lumpy.
Yes.
I wouldn't say it's been smooth stairway to the stars, all concerned. But I'm sure we can find enough positive things to, as well as perhaps the lowlights, to throw into the mix. Because it probably has been a curate's egg, a bit of both, hasn't it, Laura?
Definitely.
I mean, how do you feel if you were to think about what you might have learned and taken heart from, as well as what might have perhaps frustrated you and disappointed you in the year gone by? What would you consider?
My gosh. Well, this morning I cycled here to East London from South London, from basically where the Crystal Palace mast is, near there. And it's quite a stretch. It's maybe, I don't know, maybe 22 kilometres. And it's quite amazing how many little cycle routes there are from there to here that weren't there before the kind of pandemic. And some of it was there last year as well. So we have there's this lovely little cycle lane on Rosendale Road by a school, a little two-way thing, and then you go through, you're quickly into Railton Road. It's like a low traffic neighborhood, and then there's like a long stretch where there's nothing, and then a couple of low traffic neighborhoods either side of the main road. It's just sort of, you're in the bus lane with the buses, and it's a bit kind of sketchy. But then long cycle lane through, and then I've got the low traffic neighborhood in my local area, and there's quite a big change, actually. I mean, locally, to me, also a big change kind of culturally, how people use the roads around here. There's like a real sense of, you know, the roads feel safer. So I remember Professor Rachel Audrey doing some research on this and saying that if traffic volumes get below a certain amount, then you get people walking in the road and instead of on the pavements. And I just thought, well, you never see that ever. And sure enough, it happens. And you get people with small children just walking down the middle of the road, and people just walk out without looking now. So when you're cycling through, you kind of have to be on alert, because people just don't look. It's amazing. They'll just step out with this assurance that they're going to be safe. And it's a wonderful thing. And yeah, that's kind of really given me hope, that kind of micro level, but also traveling around the city and just seeing these, like, oh, there's a new little bit there that makes that junction safer, or like a new low traffic neighborhood. And so, yeah, that's been wonderful. And I realise it's a huge patchwork across London. Some places have had a taste of that and then it's been taken away. But I think there is a lot to be positive for, and a huge amount of change in the city. And all credit to Will Norman and his team, and then the local boroughs, because it's been a hell of a thing.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I see exactly the point you're making about the change in attitude, the way, you know, the change of usage by the users. That's so key to all of this, isn't it? And I remember the very, very, you know, lockdown one or whatever, that when the country really did go quiet, that phenomenon of, when I felt it was safe and appropriate to go out exercising and running, I used to run down the middle of the road, quite instinctively, actually, partly to avoid people coming towards me on the pavement, because we just didn't know much about the virus back then, did we? And also because you can't really pass two abreast on a lot of London's pavements because of pavement parking. So it seemed the logical thing to do was just step out in the road and kind of reclaim it instinctively. I didn't really know the significance of what I was doing, but I think it's really interesting what you said about Rachel Aldred actually backing that up with evidence, that people just they just migrate into the road like that. I think we can build on that. That's a tool to use, isn't it?
Yeah, and we have pavement parking, so there's not actually that much room on the pavements here as well.
Especially not when it's bin day as well. I went for a run today, and when they put the bins out, the wheelie bins, and you've got parked cars, you literally don't have any room left on the pavements, do you? But that's, you know, but there we go.
I went to Waltham Forest a couple of months ago with some Coventry City councillors, and we were walking along with Clyde Lokes, the deputy leader there, who's behind a lot of this positive change. And the councillors couldn't believe that we were sort of walking around these vast streets sort of in the road, really, and that it was quiet and you know, all the kind of typical things that became a bit cliche during lockdown is, you know, I could hear the birds sing and things like that. Well, that's all still there in Waltham Forest. You know, I've lost it. Where I am, I can't hear the birds anymore. But in Waltham Forest, it's still there, and it really makes a massive impact to people, and it sets the tone. You know, a lot of people say street design is about designing it so that people know what's appropriate for that street, and I think part of it is, you know, part of that is humans, walkers, pedestrians, people on bikes, they learn what the street is designed for by the tone that is set through traffic volumes and things like that. So people adapt accordingly very, very quickly, which is really nice to see.
If I had to sort of highlight one little moment where a really kind of positive penny drop in this year just gone by, it was actually back in November when I came up to your neck of the woods, Adam, and I think I talked about it in the podcast, to do an after dinner speech at a cycling club, and I had to take my suit with me. I don't have a car. I jumped on a train to do the kind of long 100-mile bit in the middle of my journey, but I bookended it either side to get to the train station in London and to get from the train station in the Midlands over to the hotel they put me up in by riding my folding bike. And of course, I'm so stupid. I've got two folding bikes in the shed, but I spent an hour that morning before I set off on the phone. You know, if you ever try and book a full-sized bike onto a train in this country, it takes for it's just, you know, you have to phone some poor soul in an Indian call center, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my word. Don't we know it?
And it's really super complicated. It doesn't cost you money, but it just takes forever. It takes so much time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always work, because sometimes they just say it's all booked up. Anyway, and it was at that point that my partner just turned to me and said, Ned, you've got two folding bikes.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I've actually got two, and that's a ludicrous thing. But it was, you know, I selected the one with the solid tyres just to make it much harder to ride, but puncture proof, because I didn't fancy getting a puncture in the middle of kind of the countryside around the south of Birmingham. But that was a real moment for me where I thought, actually, regardless of everything that, you know, Chris is doing in Manchester, Will Norman's doing in London, and Adam's obviously going to go on and achieve in the West Midlands in terms of infrastructure, a lot of what we've got is already there for us. And it's a bit, chimes in a little bit with what you're saying, Laura. If you kind of want to find it, you will find it to some extent. And if you want to be creative and think about, well, how can I do this differently? There's a lot more that we can do working with what we've already got in front of us, you know, and that lies quite clearly and squarely, that bit of the experience anyway, within our sphere of influence. So the stuff that we can do without having to sit back and wait for the world around us to change, you know, and that was quite a moment for me. Because it has been, as I alluded to, you know, it has been easy to sometimes get frustrated this year, hasn't it, with one step forward and one step back, or even two steps forward and two very rapidly backwards again.
Yeah.
So that was good. That was, you know, if I want to be positive, that little moment kind of opened my eyes a little bit to just being... Yeah, and actually, I've been on that journey personally for kind of 3 or 4 years now, and I need to continue it and see what else I can do with it, you know. Low points? Anyone want to? Should we chime in with some low points? I mean, for me, in London, the Kensington Cycle Lane was probably the low point of the year in terms of not just the thing that happened with the Kensington Cycle Lane, but the message it sent out.
Yeah,
that was almost more important than the isolated bit of road in itself as a specific item. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, yeah. It was a metaphor, wasn't it, for the kind of, loathe to use the word battle, but there's a little bit of push and pull across the very immediate need for change and then the protection of the status quo. And I think one of the most frustrating things about active travel or people who are supporters of active travel, which is most people statistically, is that it's really good policy. Like it's as Chris Borman always says, it's a really sort of sturdy soapbox to stand on. And the really frustrating thing about that is just the facts did not matter. Any representative opinion polling statistics around, 4,000 people a day were using that cycle lane at one point. There was really no rationale behind it. And I think that was the most frustrating thing, because you felt powerless effectively to do stuff, because you had all the evidence there that this was worth doing and this was important. And of course, it's a massive gap in the network as well. It's not just a street, it's east to west connectivity for the capital city of the country, and that's frustrating.
Have you seen Laura or Adam, have you seen over the festive period Don't Look Up, the film on Netflix?
No.
Oh, not yet. I want to watch it.
Well,
yes,
without spoiling it for our listeners, many of whom will have seen it, or either of you. I mean, it's not a brilliant film. It's a 6 or 7 out of 10, but it's quite an entertaining way to spend a couple of hours. But and this isn't a spoiler, I promise you. There is a comet that they've identified that's heading towards planet Earth, right? And they know it's coming, and it's 10 kilometers wide, and it's going to be an extinction event. And the scientists who discover it eventually get an audience in the White House with the president and the chief of staff, and they say, well, what's the likelihood it's going to strike Earth? And they say, well, it's 99.97% going to strike Earth. And they go, so it's not a certainty then. and the whole film is around being right, or having the evidence to back up, having the facts that justify your position is actually not enough. In 2021, it's not even close to being enough because of the landscape in politically and in terms of the media landscape in which we're all operating. So, yeah, that's a key frustration. And I think you're right. I think Kensington was a metaphor for that, wasn't it?
Yeah. And also not to ignore the pains of the people in West Sussex and the upper Shoreham Road cycle lane, which they desperately fought to try and keep. There was a huge campaign, and also there was a similar case in Brighton and one in Liverpool. So yeah, it's happened up and down the country. Facts don't matter. It's just, despite all the support saying that it's not causing congestion, that people use it, enables safe journeys for children, when it comes down to it, if you don't win, like you were saying, Ned, if you don't kind of win the hearts and minds or the emotional argument, you can throw as many facts at people as you want, but people could just use it to kind of, bolster their own position. If you want to believe something, you're going to believe it to an extent.
I think one of the learnings that I'm going to try and apply, that no one's not going to point any fingers at, oh, that's right or that's wrong, because I think anyone who built cycle lanes in 2020 and 2021 needs to be, highly commended for doing that. It was really important for them to do that. But I think some of the implementation and some of the way, just the way things look, I'm really torn with wands, because wands are, quite effective and really easy to install from a kind of traffic management point of view, and from an engineering point of view, you sort of just bolt them into the ground. But a lot of looking at the subtext between, a lot of what was being talked about in the areas where there was wands, it was the fact that they were unsightly that people kind of kicked off about. And it's, ironic, because there's lots of things that are unsightly, including parking and, all sorts of things. But it's the new things that people focus on. And I think some of the Manchester cycle lanes that have just been installed in Chorlton, some of the areas are kind of using light materials, but they're actually using curbs instead of wands. And it just obviously provides probably similar, if not better, protection, but it just fits so much more into the streetscape. And I think we had this kind of Wild West season in 2020 where, councils had to do something, and it was the right thing to do, but they were just using materials that they had left in their sheds because they couldn't buy any new stuff because it was all sold out. So, water-filled barriers, things like that, bright red, bright white roadwork stuff. And I think in hindsight, that's probably one of the things that we can learn and improve on, because you have to win the hearts and minds as well as having the data to back it up.
Yeah, they are quite leery, aren't they? I passed some of those wands the other day in quite a well-heeled leafy area, and they stick out like a sore thumb. It's quite funny, really. I remember at one point in central London, there was like a temporary lane that had been made out of just cones, like normal traffic cones, the witch's hat things, and they'd all blown over in a high wind, like dominoes, so they were just sort of lying flat on the road, and it was, yeah. But then a few months later, got the ones in. Looks kind of fine. But yeah, I think it does. I think it does put people off. I think you're right.
Yeah,
completely agree. Yeah, yeah. Laura, I think you invited people on social media, didn't you, to chip in with their highlights and
I did.
Yeah, we had loads of people. It was well nice. It was nice to see all those.
Yeah, it was nice, wasn't it? Yeah, there's definitely a theme. there are definitely themes.
Well, let's just run through a few of those. Maybe Dawson's Heights on Twitter says the highlight is seeing more people enjoying walking and cycling, a positive to come out of the pandemic. Low light, that TFL ad.
Yeah.
And then face palm emoji. Do you want to remind us just what that was, Laura, and how it got, well, it didn't get resolved, but it got kind of removed.
I was actually going to say more people cycling was also a highlight of mine, and also more diverse people cycling.
Absolutely, yeah.
And walking as well. Completely. And it's really wonderful to see. Really, really wonderful to see. And of course, our visit to Crisp Street Cycle Hub, a testament to the work of community groups and kind of local ambassadors to help that. Yeah, the TFL ad, I have to admit, I couldn't actually watch it. I think there's like a level of trauma sometimes when you cycle and when you've kind of experienced some quite horrible, scary behaviour from other road users in which you feel like you might genuinely get hurt, that I physically couldn't watch it. If it came on, I would have to mute it and look away until it was gone. And yeah,
here's the strange thing about it, Laura. As far as I remember it, and it's been a while since I've seen it, but you don't really see what. There's no actual
Nothing
collision.
Really happened. No.
There's no. they just. She slams on the brakes, and he looks a bit wobbly and comes to a halt, and then they start shouting at each other.
Yeah.
Or rather, he starts shouting at her, and she starts shouting back. Spoiler alert, you don't really know what it's all kind of implied. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty odd, actually.
Yeah, I think coming from the creative process side of things as well, in my day job, you know, there's, you know, there would have been a brief to kind of like, don't get people to think about what the collision is because of the right and wrong of that. But what you ended up with is kind of this nothingness, which, you know, to get people close enough to the camera angle so that they could have that dialogue, it had to either be a close pass or she was about to, like, you know, left hook him or something like that. I just totally overreacted, didn't he? I just don't know why he didn't see her point of view. You know, don't you want to just before you die, don't you want to just see her someone else's point of view?
But I mean, the you know, because we do need to keep this positive. The positive of the whole story was that TFL reacted really quite promptly.
Yes.
To the the scorn that was poured, quite deservedly, I think, on the creatives, which is an awful word, who came up with that abominable bit of messaging, I think. And they did, to be fair to them, they reacted and hooked it. And I doubt we'll ever see it again. So that was a happy ending.
There's a systematic problem here, I've noticed. And one of the first things I've done in the commissioner role is ask for anything like that to be run past me first. But there is a whole business model, I think, a whole system of people who are involved in this line of work, and there's lots of money on the table if you're in road safety, and none of it, I think there's some highly proven ways to make a difference with road safety. Policing is one of them, etc. But you know, there's lots of stuff that there's money floating around in councils all across the country to do effectively, you know, handing out high-vis jackets and asking people to be nice to each other. And I think we need to have a way more evidence-led approach of what actually keeps vulnerable road users safe, and just focus on doing that, really, and leave all the other kind of high-vis and flashing light stuff to, you know, the highway code or whatever. But let's not kind of overtly make that what road safety is, because it's not really.
West Midlands Police pioneered this, didn't they, around their close pass op. That's how it came about. They looked at what was causing collisions, and they tackled those things, and they had quite a big impact on road safety, and it was great. Yeah.
I mean, it feels to me like we're at the beginning of a really long journey with all of this. You know, it reminded me when you were talking just now, Adam, of the days, when was it, about 4 years ago, something like that, where we all had to campaign against TFL putting those yellow stickers on the back of buses that said caution, cyclists stay back.
Yeah.
And only today I went for a run down the river path on the River Pool in South London, and it's just a park. It's literally a park with a tarmac path alongside the river. But there is a little depot there that belongs to the council, and I think they operate little tractors there that do, you know, a bit of park maintenance and stuff. And overnight, like, since I've been there, suddenly a little posters have appeared all around the cycle path saying, caution, beware, vehicles operate in this area, you know? And it's directed at all the people using the path by foot and occasionally by bike.
Yeah.
And as far as I could tell, by looking at the depot, there wasn't a single sign there saying to the people in the tractors or anything, caution, you're in a park, there are people, you know, they're using this as a pedestrian. So
yeah.
It's all the wrong way around all the time, isn't it? And the more incidences like this that are relatively high profile and campaigns that are successful like this, the more maybe the penny will drop. You know, and also, we'll come on to this, I'm sure, but the changes to the highway code might have another little, kind of effect here to change people's thinking.
Yeah, well, that's a potential positive that I think a couple of, a couple of readers... sound like magazine days. A couple of our listeners talked about Brian Deegan used a lot of acronyms, but the bit we did understand was the highway code. He was pleased about coming in, and the highway code changes are due to be law, due to go through. And
yeah,
hierarchy of responsibility, which.
Yeah, no, I think that's it, really. That's one of the key things, isn't it? And
Adam, when do they come in, the highway code changes? Because you know the whole thing about pedestrians having right of way at junctions if they're waiting at the side of the road. I tried that today. I tried that a couple of times this afternoon.
Yeah, how'd it go for you?
Didn't go well, mate, to be honest.
There's an element of hope, isn't there, at the moment? Like, oh, I think it's okay.
Did you not shout like rule 170 at them and wave your highway code as you tried to cross the road?
I'm thinking of carrying leaflets around and try and slap them on the windscreens of cars as they drive past. But yeah,
well, that's what Brian Deegan did when he was testing out these side road zebras, wasn't it? He kind of put. They had one in Manchester, and then he kind of stepped out repeatedly in front of people to see what they would do.
So I don't have the exact timings in front of me, but yeah, I know it's due to be ratified. I think early in 2022. Okay. So I think there is some fairly kind of interesting discussions probably going on behind the scenes of how it's communicated, because a lot of people have not read the hybrid code in decades, and. You know, communicating new changes without being preachy and turning people off, but also understanding that there are some significant changes here, is going to be really challenging, isn't it, to get that across to an entire population. But I don't think it's going to be a silver bullet, but I think it's and no point, as you will have worked out, Ned, no point being sort of injured and right in terms of saying, have you not read about the hierarchy of responsibility? But I think in practice it will be a positive change that sort of sets the tone for a lot of other things, and maybe the way that our streets are designed and things like that.
Listen, I'm going to rattle through, just very quickly, I'm going to rattle through a few more contributions from our listeners. Karim Diatabaji, Tubaji, I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Personal highlight is having made a conscious choice for every local journey in 2021, my family achieved 90% plus of local trips by active mobility.
Oh, well done.
Really good.
And I've got pie charts from this year and last year, which is outstanding.
Yeah, pie chart of everything they've done. It's amazing. Councillor Rob Wilson says, highlights, government launching the non-London Mini Holland. Didn't know anything about that, I have to admit. Laura, can you fill us in on that?
Well, I don't think any have actually been done, but I think there's been a competition process. There's a competition process ongoing, is my understanding.
He goes on to say Shrewsbury have submitted an EOI, whatever that is.
Expression of interest, I believe.
Oh, okay. So they're applying for funding to...
And I guess in the same way that London Mini Hollands, as they were known, Waltham Forest, Kingston and Ealing. Ealing?
No, Kingston, Enfield and Waltham Forest.
Well, we'll come to Ealing in a second, but...
Waltham Forest and Enfield. Why did I think Enfield? Ealing? I always get this confused. Yeah, Enfield have done some great stuff. I just always get the... confused. So in the same way that they've kind of acted as showcases for London, the hope is that the ones outside of London will do that for the UK. So
got you.
People can't say, oh, well, that's London, we can't do it. No. Yeah.
Edward Taylor talks about his highlight being the opening of the Chisholm Trail and the new bridge on the River Cam.
Ah, yes.
Being his highlight.
Like a lovely bridge.
Yes.
That's
a great bridge.
I don't know anything about that, but I'll Google it after we've done this recording. John Stone, who is a journalist who lives in London and does some quite interesting route planning, doesn't he, for people. And you can look him up on YouTube, I think, and he'll tell you how to get from A to B by bike in London. He says, low light, definitely Ealing Council ripping out most of its entire active travel programme.
Very sad.
Highlight being Haringey approving its three first LTNs.
Mm.
You've mentioned Brian Deegan's contribution. Wandsworth Cycling, on a positive note, general faith that with all the impediments, setbacks and shouting, London is accepting the future involves more walking, cycling and fewer cars. And do you know what? I think Wandsworth Cycling account is correct to say that, because it's quite easy to get disheartened, isn't it? It's quite easy to lose yourself in frustration. But actually, if you kind of rewound 4 or 5 years and then another 10 beyond that,
yeah,
you'd see enormous changes.
Absolutely.
A lot has changed. Yeah.
Peter Clinch says, Scotland has a government that increasingly gets it. We have a minister who showed up at a Bikeability Scotland session in normal clothes. And the bad includes predictably crass reactions to him showing up in normal clothes. That's part of it too. And just finally, and I agree with Ride Leicester absolutely about this, a highlight of 2021 has been the BBC journalist based in the Netherlands.
Yes.
Anna Holligan, look her up on Twitter if you're not already, who does her glorious news from the cycle path almost daily, actually, where she has fixed a camera on her bike and cycles up wherever she happens to be in the Netherlands, cycles up and down in all weathers, doing the news, really.
Wonderful.
Telling you what's happening in the world. It's a great bit of video. She posts regularly and it's a really good...
It's great.
Good positive message, I think.
Yeah.
It's really cut through, I think, as well, just to people who aren't into bikes as well. You know, she's a mom. She's not a, inverted commas, cyclist that we would define her as in this country. Someone who rides a bike every day. But obviously the Netherlands don't really have cyclists in that sense. There's people that ride bikes. And to see some of the fact that also she's got some brilliant kind of sort of balancing act with her, her work and her home life as well, often her kids in tow, and having to do, she's doing live pieces on the 10 o'clock news with, like in the middle of nowhere, just with a phone kind of set up. And it's really impressive to show that actually the bikes can make a big difference and can be totally normal. And I was listening to the media show on Radio 4 the other day with John Snow on there, as he's retiring from Channel 4.
Oh yeah.
And he said that one of the main reasons he got good scoops was because he had a bicycle, because he just got around London before anyone else did, got to the stories, got his microphone out, started talking to people before anyone else arrived, because they were all in cars. Which I thought was nice.
Totally true as well, isn't it? I mean, let's not forget that the bicycle averted the Third World War breaking out during the Cuban Missile Crisis, didn't it? Because the message that was passed from the Soviet embassy in Washington to the White House, the lines were down or couldn't be operated, the secure lines, and a message had to be delivered by a bicyclist instead. And it only just got there in time. Wow. There we go.
I mean, I did not know that. That's a good one.
I didn't know that
one, isn't it?
Either. Very good.
So have we got time, do you think, just to nip through the year and the key little stories?
Yeah.
Yeah, should we do that?
Let's go back down memory lane.
January 2021. Questions were raised over the future of pop-up bike lanes up and down the country after TfL's Street Space defeat. God, that seems like old-fashioned news already, doesn't it? Street Space defeat in the High Court. All over taxi access to Bishopsgate in the City of London. The street was made cycle and bus only in the 2020s emergency active travel measures, which a judge then ruled unlawful. Then TfL successfully appealed and overturned the ruling in June. What's happened to Street Space? What is that still a thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of the emergency stuff, much of which has been made permanent. I think you do see the odd, because they were sort of blue and white filled barriers. Waterfield barriers.
They were ugly.
Yeah, they were ugly.
They were ugly.
Some of them becomes them to pedestrians, yeah, because they were basically fences. If you couldn't step over, yeah, them, or you couldn't actually get through them at all because they were just fences. A bit awkward. But yeah, some of them have been made permanent. And then Yeah, I think TfL's funding situation is just dreadful. They're getting sort of bits and bobs from government, but there's no real long-term planning. There are a couple of things that were supposed to be built months and months ago that just haven't appeared. So I think there has been some continuation, but it's all a bit up in the air because nobody knows how much money there's going to be in 6 months' time. So, yeah.
Back in January as well, research by Adam on behalf of the hashtag Bike is Best campaign revealed the former cycle lane turned back into a driving lane by Kensington and Chelsea Council in 2020 was blocked by parked cars for 80% of the time. And the council agrees to revisit the scheme. Two things on that, Adam. One is Bike is Best was that all this year? Good grief.
Yeah, this year and last year. We're going into our kind of what is technically our third year next year, funded by the industry to kind of do more advocacy work and more campaign work, marketing work. So
that's good stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been good. And we're doing lots of research as well, which has kind of created a bit of a news thing. But on this one, it got a lot of people talking. We were trending on the Guardian homepage for a bit. But as we were talking about earlier, only having data on your side is not enough. But we did have some good data. It did make the whole situation look rather silly.
I wonder if that Twitter campaign still monitoring that. Is the car still parked in the Kensington bike lane? Anyway, digressing.
And also in January, work begins, and I think you were alluding to this, Laura, earlier on, work begins to remove a popular cycle lane on Upper Shoreham Road in West Sussex.
Yeah.
Following unsubstantiated claims it caused congestion. So you're obviously up
Very
to speed
sad.
On that controversy, yeah.
Is that, sad.
It's just gone, has it?
It's just gone. And there was one in Old Shoreham Road in Brighton, which I think may have suffered the same fate.
I think you're right.
They were supposed to join in the middle. One road leads to another. Upper Shoreham turns into Old Shoreham and vice versa. But one got removed and then the other one got removed. And super sad for people who live there, and they desperately campaigned for it. And all the evidence showed that it was not causing congestion. It was very popular and all of that, but it didn't matter. So the councillor that ripped them out hadn't even visited.
Is there some sort of legal challenge going on, Laura?
Cycling UK is doing the legal challenge. It's been granted the right to challenge, to do a judicial review, and that's ongoing. And I think they're expecting an answer in January on that. So, Cyclist Defence Fund.
All right. Well, we spent far too much time talking about cycling outside of London. Let's get back to talking about cycling
in
London. Well, a big London-based story in May was the re-election of Sadiq Khan. On a mandate of more, obviously a whole load of things, but also on a mandate of more cycle and walking infrastructure being put in place. But I think what was quite interesting about this election from a voter's point of view here, Laura, was that actually, I think in the past I've questioned Sadiq Khan's commitment to cycling walking infrastructure. I'm not alone in that.
You're not alone.
But what was quite a feature, I think, of this particular election is that he was almost apart from the Green candidates, he was almost a lone voice in this, wasn't he? Because
Lib Dems weren't,
Yeah, but all right, maybe I didn't concentrate on
Lib Dems. But nationally, they were a bit flip-floppy.
But he was facing a candidate in the Conservative opponent who was really quite unequivocally kind of opposed to a lot of this, wasn't he?
Although he said he wasn't, but then he actually was.
But he actually was, if you drill down and listen to his... The interviews he gave were very revealing, weren't they? So I don't know whether you can really... I don't know how much that kind of played into Sadiq Khan's victory, but it was probably...
There was a lot going on outside of cycling. Yeah. So, but it was good news if you want more cycling in London because, Sean Bailey was not into cycling and actually has had to step down because of...
having a party when no one was allowed to have parties.
That's what that would have been awkward if he was mayor.
Yeah, this time next year we'll be quizzing Adam Tranter about his Christmas parties that he had. Laura, you were responsible for the media. Well, you worked very hard on delivering the media reporting guidelines.
Oh my gosh, I did. In May. I almost forgot about this, actually. I only put it in at the last minute. I suddenly remembered. Yeah.
Well, remind us what that was and what happened with it. And
Guidelines for media reporting on road safety, road collisions, just to try and improve language, which impacts how we think about things, which impacts who we place blame on, and trying to sort of even things out a bit. So, it's really only the start of work. It needs sort of pushing now. So watch this space, I guess.
Don't underestimate how much how much progress you made, Laura. Though I think it was really really important to get this down on paper so that people can reference it and create a discussion about it. And you know, I know that not everyone's on board from a media perspective, and there are some challenges in terms of you know, some of the pointers, which there's still, like, you know, even people who are kind of supportive of active travel measures are you know, unsure about a few points on things like that. But
yeah, and I would change now. There's stuff I would change about them, definitely, and the stuff that I no longer, yeah, I would like to see it updated.
But I was going to say, though, that you know, I've seen tweets from the Metropolitan Police and other people like that who have changed their language as a result of the guidelines, you know, saying that a driver was involved rather than just the car. So, yeah, it's ace.
Yeah.
Well, that's job done. In my book, well, not job done, but job begun. And
I tell you what, Laura,
no one else, no, but as Adam says, you know, no one else was doing it, and you did. So, you know, that was a good thing, and it has moved the dial.
Yeah.
June 2021, this was big, wasn't it? The government agreeing £1.08 billion for TfL in the kind of ongoing and piecemeal saga of their funding, but significantly specifying that £100 million of that £1 billion fund, so 10% or thereabouts, should be spent on healthy streets and active travel programmes. Mm-hmm. Wonder how that's shaping up 6 months down the line.
Yeah.
Let's move on to July then, when the government launched Gear Change 1 year on, showing that cycling has increased a staggering 46% during the pandemic, making that the greatest increase, a big step change in post-war history. Showcasing improvements over the previous 12 months and announcing funding sanctions against councils that remove cycle lanes prematurely, focusing instead on data collection. Also announced that Active Travel England should be formed, and a passing reference also to pavement parking, which is one of our big bugbears on this podcast, isn't it? I remember that coming out in July, even though I was kind of focusing on the Tour de France myself, but thinking that went further in some of the language and some of, you know, the direction of travel than I was anticipating from the government on that point. Yeah, it was a positive moment.
Yeah, it was positive. And we're still waiting on the formation of Active Travel England. I think they were talking about autumn and then still waiting, but hopefully next year.
There was an announcement, according to one of the accounts on Twitter, an email to local authorities saying expect news in January. So, you know, it has been a long time coming, but it's not an insubstantial thing to set up, and also set up so that, you know, in future governments follow the programme rather than, you know, abolishing it or whatever. So, yeah, that would be big news when it comes.
Also in July, decisions were taken in Brighton, as we discussed, to remove cycle lanes. And I didn't know this, or rather, if I did, I've forgotten, but Liverpool also, Liverpool Council took out some cycle lanes.
Yeah.
Much more famously, at least down in London, in August, because it was such a stink about it as well, it was so rancorous, was the decision that Ealing took to take out its many low traffic neighbourhoods, which it had put in place in some kind of Victorian residential grid streets. They've all gone, I think. Is that right? Have they all gone?
All but, I think, one. Again, the polling is peculiar because for things that are too long for this podcast, but it basically allowed residents to say whether they wanted to keep it or not, which made it sound like, you know, it's something that only affects a referendum, but also only affects residents, and actually LTNs are part of the transport network, right? So we do need to listen to other folk. But when we get that feedback from other folk, it was very clear that, you know, a lot of people outside the borough were responding to that, which, based on what I have just said, sounds fair. I think everyone should be able to have their say, but as Laura's mentioned, these things shouldn't be referendums, and there's no, you know, requirement for these things to be referendums. Sometimes you've got to do them in the right way. You've got to make the effort to consult and try and bring people along with you, but no policy ever has received unanimous 100% positive feedback. And if you look at the things over the past of wheelie bins or the smoking ban or bus lanes or even sewers, you know, we would have had sewers in London several decades before we actually had them if it wasn't for the kind of pushback that there was of sewers. You know, sometimes you've got to just do this stuff. It's hard, but you've got to do it.
Massive news for you in November, Adam.
Oh yeah, it popped up. You followed me on Twitter, which I was
awkward.
just Delighted, humbled and delighted about.
Super, super awkward. I had no idea I haven't followed you. But I've enjoyed following you ever since. Particularly, I enjoyed when you announced your commission the other day and your kind of politician stride.
Had a politician stride in my blue suit. I thought if people can't say I'm anti-car if I look like I'm dressed like a quick fit mechanic.
And then we come to December just briefly. Department for Transport announcing that they're going to publish a report into pop-up cycling and walking schemes. That's the good news. The bad news is that according to Cycling UK, it's going to take 3 years basically to see the results. There'll be no baseline data until this time next year, and the results of the report might be published as late as 2024. Nothing like a climate emergency to sharpen minds. Good news, though. Let's end on the good news as we review the year. Cycle mode share in London, doubling from a staggeringly low, but it's the direction of travel, folks, 2.7%. in 2019-2020 to 5.3%, according to Transport for London. And that's a big increase. That was good news, wasn't it, Laura?
Very good news. Yeah, very, very good news.
It will be better news if it carries on growing at that rate.
Yes, at that rate, exactly.
And hat tip to the boroughs of Haringey, approving their, I think we mentioned that before, their first LTNs this month. Oxford voting to make Cowley low transport neighbourhoods permanent. And Hackney getting involved as well with, and Islington making other low traffic neighbourhoods in their boroughs permanent. And of course, the final big news of December 2021, that Adam becomes a walking and cycling commissioner, which leads us on. I think we should finish with our, you know, all three of us, our hopes for something really positive to emerge in 2022. Or it doesn't have to be a massive thing, even if it's a small thing. I had a little think about what I might say when I was out for my run this afternoon. So I've got something up my sleeve, but who wants to lead off?
What do we say? Such a big thing. One thing. So I think I would just like to see it less of a kind of postcode lottery for safe cycling routes in the UK. But it's the chances are that it's going to stay that way for some time. But that's what I would like to see, because everyone deserves safe cycling walking routes.
I would like to, from a commissioner point of view, I think I would like to try and implement some small but really effective measures that can have a real impact across the West Midlands. So there will be big stuff, and there will be important the big ticket items that people can kind of open and take a lot of planning. But I think there's some really important things we can do around cycle hangers. I think there are some really important things we can do about drop curbs, about contraflow cycling, little things that could open up a network using the infrastructure we already have, like you pointed out earlier, Ned. And I think personally, I'm really enjoying walking a lot at the moment. I broke my elbow a couple of weeks ago and haven't been able to ride my bike, but I have been able to walk and I've been doing that. And I think it's a really important perspective doing my job. And making sure that we do everything we can to get people to walk for short journeys.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Here's a thing that I thought about, you know, my longing for COVID to do one and leave our lives and stop dictating the terms on which we live our lives at the moment. I was struck by, I don't know in your neighbourhoods, guys, whether you have many of these, but I think there are quite a few up and down the country, probably hundreds actually. But for the duration of the pandemic so far, about 500 metres from here, by a shopping centre, there is a small-ish car park which belongs to Lewisham Council and is run by Lewisham Council, that has been turned over to be a COVID test centre with gazebos and God knows what. And, you know, it's not a particularly big COVID test centre, but it's been there for a year and a half, by my reckoning, already. And it takes over the entire car park. Now, I was thinking that I don't know how many there are of these places, but I think there are a lot in the country that have been sighted in car parks. I want, when this damn thing goes away and we don't have the need for these COVID test centres everywhere, I want, when they all go home, I don't want these facilities to be car parks any longer, because self-evidently the world has not stopped turning because those car park places have been taken away from our landscapes. We have got by perfectly well without them. As far as I know, there are no social media or other campaigns to get alternative car park places put in place because we have all been denied these car park places that we so desperately need. I see no justification in continuing to run them as car parks. I want them to be dug over, and I want them to be turned over to the community and given over to green spaces, rewild them and make them something much, much better, less useless and destructive than a car park. And I think that is a simple fix, and I see no possible argument why that shouldn't be done as soon as we're done with COVID test centres.
Oh, that's a good one. That's really good. The one I go to is in a car park as well.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah.
Imagine walking past and going, oh, this place has gone right downhill. This used to be a beautiful COVID test centre.
Look at it now, all overgrown with life. All right, well, that was that. Thank you, I suppose. I should definitely thank you two for being my companion on this podcast throughout 2021. I guess we're going to carry on, aren't we, in 2022? Yeah. I see no reason not to.
Yeah, we'll keep doing it. Absolutely. I feel like about a couple of weeks ago when my new job was announced, I reached a point where I don't think I could better on my local radio station, where I was introduced or segued to the Backstreet Boys, which I think could be a nice outro for us on this special occasion.
Oh, yes. Yes. Do you know, I'm so glad you reminded me that. Yeah. So this is, we're going to leave you with this, and then our title music as well at the end. But yeah, you should have a little listen to the music that accompanies Adam's introduction coming up shortly on a local radio station. In the meantime, though, thank you very much to Adam and to Laura. You've been listening to Streets Ahead. Let us know what you think at Pod Streets Ahead. Rate us and review us, and we mean it, please, because it really helps us jump up the charts and algorithms and all that sort of thing. And share the podcast with anyone you think might enjoy it. In the meantime, Happy New Year. We'll catch you in 2022. And this is Adam and the Backstreet Boys.
Bye.
Commissioner Adam Tranter, the new commissioner in charge of cycling and walking in the West Midlands. On the show this afternoon. Right, it's nearly 4:15. Boney M. I like a bit of Boney M before 4. But right now, here's the Backstreet Boys.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.